All right, Common Sense Ohio, August 20, 2025. The summer has flown by, but we got lots to talk about. From Russia with Love, all things Russia, Putin, and others. Gee whiz, Ohio State is bringing Gordon Gee back. We'll cover that. And as a car, a deadly weapon, on a serious note, we'll chop up the latest news on the police shooting here, right here in Columbus, Ohio. It's getting some national attention. But before we get to all that, a word from our sponsor, Harper Plus Accounting. Check them out right here. All right, we are back.
Where were they when they recorded that?
It looks very
familiar. That is a hell of a studio.
It looks awesome. Check us out, channel511.com, if you want to record your podcast. But we should just shout out our show, of course, commonsenseohioshow.com. If you got a question you want to ask, a topic you want us to cover, you want to be a guest, check us out right there. Everybody who knows the protocol by now, we start with our This Day in History. I've got two, Norm, because one, I think we should talk about the battle that saved Western civilization. I mean, that's sort of important, but more important, and firstly, the NFL. Okay. Founded right here in Ohio, Canton, Ohio, on this day in 1920. The powers that be met up in Canton, and for those who don't know, Canton does host the NFL Football Hall of Fame.
That's incredible. 1820?
Or 1920.
Oh,
did I say 1820?
God.
Yeah, 1920, yeah. Canton, Ohio.
You scared me.
It was the American Professional Football Association. Jim Thorpe was the first president.
Oh, I didn't know.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Good.
Yeah. And it was several Ohio teams. I mean, some of the original teams, the Canton Bulldogs, the Akron Pros, Columbus Panhandlers.
Panhandlers, wow.
Interesting.
Wow.
The Dayton Triangles, four teams from Illinois, Chicago Tigers, and, you know, after that it doesn't matter because it's not Ohio. But anyway, so check out the Canton Hall of Fame, the Football Hall of Fame. It's a pretty cool place up there. And you can check out, there's a place called the Giesen House up in Canton. I don't know if it's still there.
Hmm.
I went to the College of Worcester nearby, and we used to go float our peanut shells in our Kuhlenbacher dark beer, which I think was really Blatt's.
wow.
At the Giesen House.
The Giesen House.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Sound very German.
So the Battle of Thermopylae happens back in 480 BC. The Persians are invading Greece.
Yeah.
Leonidas the First takes on Xerxes, loses the battle, but fights so valiantly that inspires the rest of his Greek allies to rise up and save Greece from the Persians and therefore save, as they say, Western civilization.
I like the Spartans' motto, you know, come home in victory or come home on your shield.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Good for you for remembering that.
Wow. I mean, that's what the women would tell the husband, you know, like, don't embarrass the family. You're either going to win the damn war or come home dead.
And they literally fought to the last man. I mean,
that famous movie that, you know, fictionalized a little bit, but the 300.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, that's right.
That's
right.
That happened.
At least they say it happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's this day in history. And I think since we are talking about Western civilization, let's turn right to it. What you got, Norm?
Well, a little background here. We should discuss the Ukraine-Russia peace negotiations. So, people discounted the Friday meeting last week in Alaska between Trump and Putin and said, well, nothing happened. Well, you know, it takes a while to solve an active war. I mean, they're shooting people as we speak, both sides, you know, drones, artillery, bombs, missiles, they're killing each other as we speak. And so to try to come up with a ceasefire and some sort of peace agreement in the midst of a hot war is a pretty darn difficult thing to try to do. So Trump has Putin come in, they meet in Alaska. He does this flyover of a B-2 and F-35 fighters right over Putin's head, as if to make, you know, a clear statement that, you know, maybe you ought to accede to a peace agreement with Zelensky and the Ukraine, or else, you know, NATO and the United States, we may have to intervene. And, you know, here's some of our junk flying over your head. I think it did probably make a point. So then people sort of said over the weekend on the Sunday shows, well, nothing happened. It's a big nothing burger. And then literally almost overnight, he brings in some of the most powerful NATO nation heads of state for a meeting at the White House, including Zelensky, and we'll see what happens. There's talk of a bilateral meeting, maybe in Budapest, coming up in the next couple of weeks between Putin and Zelensky, direct talks. I mean, that would be like in the middle of, you know, the Vietnam War, the North and the South talking to each other about settling the Vietnam War while they're still conducting combat. So I'll believe it when I see it. But I mean, it also puts Zelensky on an even, like now he is a head of state at the same level as Putin. And I have trouble seeing Putin allow that to happen, like, because he doesn't view Ukraine as a legitimate country. So I don't know. We'll see.
Let's kick this. What I've seen out of the media, though, this is like the classic, as long as Trump is doing it, we hate it.
Sure, he's Hitler. He's the orange Hitler.
And
right.
You know, but, so, you know, on the
out
got,
of hand.
They were criticizing him for coming in and sort of kissing Putin's ass and bringing him in and giving him the red carpet and doing all this stuff.
Right.
Exactly. Which is, of course, exactly what Obama and company did and exactly what, Biden took the opposite approach and said he's a no good, rotten killer and a thug and whatever.
And did
and
nothing.
Got nothing done, right?
Did nothing.
Obama on a hot mic said, yeah, I'll tell Putin that I'll take care of him after the election. I get it. Their diplomacy has to happen in different ways. And what... It seems insane. You know, you've got this war and Trump is doing his best to try to end the war.
Yeah.
And I think he really doesn't. I think for whatever reason, he just wants to end it.
Yeah.
And I think that's legitimate.
We are shoveling a lot of money.
Well, there's a lot of money going that way.
Yeah.
So I just think it's an unfair criticism of Trump to that he's somehow taking Putin's side or giving up too much to Putin or whatever. I think, if anything, I mean, he's vowed now protection to Ukraine. We've got mineral interest in Ukraine. He's rallied the troops, so to speak, of other Western European countries to sort of back up Ukraine. I mean, he's setting this up, and I think he's doing it. It's funny. I saw this discussed a little bit on, not this exact topic, but Chris Pratt was on Bill Maher's podcast.
Right.
What is his podcast called? I just looked it up.
Club Random.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and Chris Pratt was making this point, and Bill Maher, who's been sort of a huge Trump critic, is sort of coming around to this. Like,
yeah. After he went to the White House and met Trump.
Right. And yeah. Pratt is saying, look, just because Trump did it doesn't mean it's bad. I mean, can't we just cheer for the things that are good?
Yeah.
That who right. No matter who does it.
Exactly. If Biden or Obama were doing this, I would cheer them on.
Yeah.
And it's like he's putting his winky way out on the line here, right? Because this may not work. Like I just said, I have my doubts, okay? But he's the man in the arena. He's trying.
Yeah.
And so, like, well, where are the rest of the peacemakers? Where's Chris Von Hollen and all these, you know, where's Chuck Schumer and all these critics? What have they done to try to settle?
Well, they've done
this
nothing,
war?
Right? Yeah.
But they're going to criticize the one guy who's making an attempt, and it may fail, mm-hmm. but it's noble to try.
Right. And he may have set the stage improperly. I mean, of course, his campaign is all in this in 24 hours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That,
so
he was over his skis on that one.
He was way over his skis. So anything he does do, and it's, you know, I was going to joke, this has been the longest 24 hours I've been
yes,
ever
it has.
Experienced.
Right.
But it's that, but you're right. I mean, I think. If he hadn't said that, I think maybe things might have been a little more tempered.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the media, no matter who, if Trump's doing it, it's bad. And that's all.
Oh, for sure.
And
no,
that's
no, no,
that's
no,
all.
No.
But
yeah.
You're exactly right. He I think, underestimated what he was dealing with Putin. And now, on the other hand, I think going in it like Biden did, saying, Putin, you're a no good thug. And nothing but and all that might be true. I mean, see, but here's this is
well,
the
it,
thing.
It is true.
And this
it,
is Trump's.
It is true.
Yeah.
This is,
oh yeah.
This is Trump's like anybody who knows. If you're going to go, I negotiate with prosecutors every day. Every day, I negotiate with courts, prosecutors, opposing counsel, and you don't start with saying you're an asshole.
Right. Exactly.
F you thug. You're an asshole, and everything you do is bad. Now, by the way, would you please give my client
right.
a deal?
I mean,
you know, it's like you can't do that. No. That's not diplomacy.
No,
and to treat if they would have brought Putin in and not rolled out the proverbial, if not actual, red carpet, he'd have left. And you know, then you can say, well, that's what.
Well, they flew a nuclear bomber right over his head.
Well, it wasn't like there wasn't a show of force, right?
I mean, yeah, right. You know, it was welcome. And by the way, we can crush you anytime we want. Just like we took out the reactors in Iran. You know, like here's the equipment that did that. We can do that to you too.
I spent a lot of time listening to Victor Davis Hanson, and he's a historian, and he pointed out on this topic how FDR and others, even Churchill, dealt with Stalin, who had killed, basically allied with Germany, killed a bunch of Poles.
Right. Took half of Poland. Right.
Went into Finland.
Right.
Killed a bunch of people. Like, right. He was an aggressive killer.
Yeah.
And then he became Uncle Joe overnight.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden we had a common enemy. And the point wasn't that those guys actually loved Stalin. It was that it was a... It just had to be done at the time. Mm. So it's not, you know.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right. So, right. You know, it just, these people in a vacuum just pull out these criticisms. And I've said this from the beginning. There's plenty to criticize about Trump. Just choose the stuff that's legit and not this. Don't make stuff up. I'm not advocating for the leftist cause. But if I were advising them on how to handle this, it wouldn't be what they're doing.
No, I mean, there used to be some space given to any president, you could go back to Thomas Jefferson, or you could talk about Lincoln or whoever, but when the president is conducting foreign policy, usually what would happen throughout American history until the last 20 years is the opposition, domestic opposition, would tamp down because they wanted to present to the world that Americans, regardless of the fact that we fight amongst ourselves, when it comes to foreign policy, we want to show a united front.
Yeah.
And so people would back FDR or Truman or Nixon. Well, that's when it fell apart. But people used to generally, and you saw this under Reagan, people like Tip O'Neill, his domestic, if you will, adversaries, would back President Reagan when he was dealing with Gorbachev.
Yeah.
They would unite, or at least give him space to conduct foreign policy
because
without
it was
inserting
good for the country.
Themselves.
Yeah. It's good for the country.
Good for the country. Why would you tear up President Trump trying to negotiate a peace agreement over the weekend? Yeah. I don't know. Well, I don't know why you would do that, okay, other than you hate Trump and you can't control your emotions. So you just blather all weekend about how much Trump is a boob and incompetent, and he's over, you know, he's beyond his talent, and not give him the space to try to make this work.
We're talking about the Reagan years, that sort of thing. You know how many decades we've been removed from a world war that our country's not experienced, that unity, that.
A good
fear,
point.
That fear that if we aren't in one voice, it's the end.
We don't. And it's,
9/11,
you know what
was
I mean?
The most recent.
That lasted
about 2 weeks.
Yeah, that was like a
right.
An
yeah.
Over-
and then they started criticizing
a
George
blip
Bush.
Compared to World War II. I wonder if there's something to that the collective we are don't mess with us.
I talked to a very dear friend a few years back, probably 5 years ago, and it's something similar where he was talking about socialism. And he says, yeah, I was telling my wife, you know, Steve always rails against socialism. And maybe it's because we didn't have to live through some of these years. And I'm like, listen, dude, the three of us, we grew up in the 70s, 80s, and we saw the collapse of the Soviet Empire. Like, we grew up at a time where there was a legitimate, not just an existential, a legitimate threat.
Yeah.
With first Khrushchev and then eventually we ended up with Gorbachev, who was a little bit more.
Yeah.
In tune with taking it down. But it just, you know, we had drills at school about nuclear attacks.
Yes.
And you know, I think the other side now would probably say and explain this by saying, well, that was just propaganda against communism and socialism. But it wasn't, right? And we always joke about this. It's like, well, even like Mao, back in the, you brought up Nixon. So Nixon goes and meets with Mao. And didn't he kill like 80 million people?
Yeah.
Well, and we don't have the protection of that air-to-air missile stuff now. Right. That, you know, at that time when a nuclear bomb was flying, it was flying.
Yeah,
we
didn't have, under
Reagan, I guess, kind of kicked that off in regards to air to air. I'm assuming
the SDI.
The technology was there.
Well, he at least hatched the
getting
idea.
There. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, if it was coming,
so
it
to
was
have,
coming.
And
yeah.
You know, they, like they, these people have lived too softly.
No question.
For too long.
And I'm not advocating we get back into anything big. I don't mean that.
Well, of course
I think
not. But
it's
your point is that
our collective memory, we don't know what it means.
Look.
Apparently the left right now thinks that the U.S. should be like on the ground in Ukraine. I mean, it's
well,
like
unless
beating...
Biden were president, then they wouldn't want that.
Yeah,
right?
It's just incredible that so Melania, to your point, the first lady, wrote a letter to Putin and basically explaining that, trying to make him understand. Of course, it's a public relations move, but her family comes from an area that was part of the Eastern Bloc. It was oppressed by the Soviet Union, and her family lived under that. And her letter basically expresses the angst that Eastern Europe and the NATO countries have about Putin's rather direct, if you will. It's almost like Mein Kampf. He had a speech, that a 5,000-word speech, where he issued that he has designs on Poland, Lithuania, Latvia.
And he wants to restore the greatness of the Soviet Empire.
And so Melania's writing this letter like, you got to understand when you say stuff like that, people are listening, they're taking you seriously. And why do you think Latvia and Lithuania are now part of NATO? Mm-hmm. Why do you think Sweden and Finland are part of NATO? They weren't part of, you know, they weren't part of NATO for the last 75 years, and now they are. And it's because of you, Putin. You're rattling your saber. You're scaring the shit out of people. And, you know, you got to back off.
Yeah, he's not going to.
And, you know, she's not given a whole lot of credit for that. I mean, it got press.
It did get some press.
But I don't think enough.
No,
I think that's the...
She knows what socialism
and communism
are.
I think the point you've just made that dawned on me, is, and I think you're trying to make, Brett, is that, look, she has firsthand experience and knowledge.
Exactly.
Like, she is not just coming at it as a first lady. She's coming at it as somebody who lived it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right.
And like, and I've talked to those folks before. I spent some time back in the early 90s in Estonia, and it was after the fall of the Soviet Empire. And there were, like, these people lived it, and it was fascinating to watch that history unfold. You had like half the population, or not half, but you had the Estonians, and then you had the expat Russians or Soviets that were still there.
Yeah.
And I talked to both. I mean, I talked to an old Russian soldier who's about my age at the time. And I talked to a bunch of Estonians. I mean, it was really sort of fascinating.
Absolutely.
And these people lived under that jackboot, and it's
you know, when Finland joined NATO, it doubled the length of the frontier between NATO and Russia. It doubled it. Just that one country.
Yeah.
It's so I know Putin is feeling hemmed in. But it's of his own doing.
Right, because what he wants is not tolerable.
It's not tolerable.
Right. We're not going to tolerate it.
No.
Now, the question is, what do we do? You know, do we put boots on the ground?
Yeah.
Do we get in an active war with Putin? Because, like, this is the... This
you
is
mentioned
the
minerals, Steve.
Hypocrisy.
That's a tripwire that
that's
I think Trump is very cleverly planting. That'll be U.S.
Now we have an interest.
Now we have an interest. If you roll over a token U.S. tripwire, you know, 10 Marines guarding that mineral facility, well then...
Now we have a problem.
Now we got, right?
And
without making Ukraine a NATO country.
But or U.S. territory.
Or U.S. territory. Right. But the hypocrisy of this, from the media standpoint, is just so palpable. Because look... Europe isn't going to put boots on the ground. All these, that Germany can come in. They can all come in. They don't have any soldiers.
They might do some peacekeeping. We'll see.
Well, peacekeeping is different.
That's all I mean.
To go into an active war, it's like, what else are you going to do? Are we really going to go in an active war? Or what's the other? Like some sort of European boycott of everything Russia, which means you're drawing in China. It's like, and people don't like that because then the stuff that we buy gets twice as expensive.
Right.
And are we going to tell Europe, is Europe really going to not buy oil from Russia while they build their own solar towers? I mean, it's just, the whole thing is so, it's just such a theatrical.
It is important that we acknowledge the tragedy of, it is a tragic fact that Zelensky is looking at giving up 20% of his country.
Of Donbass and Crimea.
And in a way, you know, I mean, that rewards Putin's aggression.
Yes, it does.
I mean, but what do we do? How do you undo that short of forcing him back? Ukraine's army, the average age of their soldier now is 43 years old.
Yeah, they can't last much longer.
How long can this go on? And Putin has lost, they say, as many as a million of his soldiers.
And historically, they don't give a crap.
140 million person country, the U.S. or the Soviet Union.
Yeah, they seem to not. I mean, just
and they've lost a million people.
Go research the losses, the Soviet losses during World War II.
Yeah.
I mean, it is staggering,
staggering.
Just keep throwing them at it.
Like, what's hurting Putin at home is that even his people know that this was aggression on his part.
Well,
Ukraine did not invade Russia. Russia invaded Ukraine,
and Putin got over. He's over his skis now.
He is.
He needs to save face and somehow.
Yeah.
Go back to his, you know, whoever runs
the only
that
people buying his
oligarchs.
Oil are China and India. And so he has nobody else to sell anything to now.
He's going to have to go back to his oligarchs and say, well, at least I got blank. So, and look, I negotiate, like I said, we negotiate all the time. We all do but in my business, I negotiate.
Yeah.
You've got to give them something, even if it's Pyrrhic. You have to give You have to give something.
So Zelensky has got to get rock solid security agreement out of this because he's lost 20% of his land mass. He's lost a ton of people, and he knows he's going to lose the next election. There's just no way.
Yeah.
The Ukrainian people are not going to reelect this guy who gave away 20% of their country and all of these dead people, and they did not win the war.
Yeah, they didn't win.
I mean,
they can't win this war.
They can't win it.
Yeah, they can't win. So this is really about whether the United States is going to come in and literally put boots on the ground and go get into a hot war with Russia.
Yeah, and that's not happening.
It's not. Well, I hope not.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Now, spinning off of all this is a very interesting story. That Trump is being nominated by the country of Cambodia for the Nobel Peace Prize. So he's been in office 7 months, and I can't tick them off. There's India, Pakistan, Cambodia, Thailand, obviously Russia, Ukraine, and apparently there's four more wars that Trump has either tried to negotiate a peaceful end to or has successfully in the case of Cambodia and Thailand.
Or avoided.
Avoided.
Yeah.
So he is up for the Nobel Peace Prize, and guess who endorsed him? Somebody who is under the Department of Justice grand jury as we speak, Hillary Clinton, has come out in favor of saying if Trump can walk down this path and get something done with Russia and Ukraine, she thinks he deserves the Nobel Peace
Prize. Is that right?
That's interesting.
Hillary said that. Now, could she be offering a little biscuit to Trump?
Good for her.
Hey, maybe don't jail me because it doesn't look good on the Russia hoax.
No.
The investigation into that, the emails that are coming out between her, Brennan, Clapper.
Well, let's chop this up a little bit.
Like,
we're getting what was that? So now we're going back to like 2016, 2017. We're getting pretty far removed. And, you know, on the one hand,
it's the biggest crime in U.S. history.
They did it to Trump.
Yeah.
They come around and actually indicted Trump and went after him. On the other hand, it's a long time ago. I remember when Biden got elected, I think that I said what he ought to do is just pardon Trump and just let this stuff let this stuff go.
That would have been the smart thing.
That would have been a good political. And it might have ended Trump's.
It might have. Right. Then what are you bitching about?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what it would have done, but there's smarter people than I can figure that out. But it would have been an interesting move. And Trump famously said, I'll indict you on the debate stage. And then later on, he said, look, we don't want to go down this road. You know,
he told her, you should be in prison.
Yeah, you should be
right on the debate stage.
Like, throw her in jail. And, you know,
he said, if it was up to me, would be in prison.
And rhetorically, he sort of threatens it. But then later he backs off and says,
he didn't
look,
do a thing.
This isn't good for the country. We can't do this.
Right.
So I don't know what's good or what's bad now. My personal opinion on this is I don't really care if there are indictments. In fact, maybe that's bad for the country if there are. But
I want
having hearings
truth.
And having the truth come out,
I
think is critical.
Right.
If President Obama directed this, which is what it looks like, then
he directed it in the same way maybe that Nixon directed Watergate. Like, he had plausible deniability about all this, right?
So, and he has immunity because these are actions that he took while he was in office as president. So, short of
but the darling of the Democratic Party right now is he's in the crosshairs.
He's in the crosshairs. Yeah, it does not look good for history that one president tried to initiate a takedown, you know, in effect, an impeachment of his successor, while the successor wasn't even sworn in yet. You're already trying to ruin his presidency.
Yeah, they wanted to
tie him up
with all this nonsense,
right.
And they
that
did.
That is horrible.
They
and
did.
They
committed two-thirds of his first term monkeying with this crap.
Well, in a series of crimes, when you lied to the FISA court, I want to know where is Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice John Roberts? The way the FISA court law reads is that it is to be policed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Because after all, there's no defense counsel. There's nobody standing up for the rights of the person that they're going to, you know, tap their phones and get all the information. There's no protection. And the idea is of the FISA court is in an extreme situation to grant the FBI the right to look into your phone and to look into all of this stuff because it involves foreign intrigue. And it turns out that the pretext for all of that were lies by the Obama administration to look into Trump officials. And it all turned out that it was lies. The FBI guy who wrote the request to the FISA court was sanctioned and found that he did wrong. But where is John Roberts, you know, to change either how FISA works or to toss people in jail?
Yeah.
They lied to the FISA court. There couldn't be anything more serious in our civil rights than government officials going to the court system without the benefit of defense counsel like Steve to represent me and say, we want to know everything about Norm Murdoch. We want to know all his emails, all his phone calls. We want to know who he met, every charge on his credit card. We want all this stuff because Norm is really a Russian agent.
Yeah. And how do you know that? Well, it's classified.
Because I say so.
It's classified.
And
we
then the judge goes, okay, I give you benefit of the doubt. And now that it's come out, it was a complete lie. When does the other foot drop?
Well, I think it just needs to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as it comes out, I'm happy with it. Now, the truth.
Yeah.
And indicting people 10 years later, I don't know that is, that's a, yeah, that I fear one, it's too long. Two, it's going to trigger, like you said, to use your term, a tripwire for the other side to start doing the same. Like it's a seesaw that has no end, but get the truth out, get it out. And then politically say, listen, we're not going to disrupt the country right now by indicting Obama or trying to go after Obama or go after Hillary or going. But here, look, people, you need to know that this crap happened and it is true. And here's the proof of it. It happened. Now, how that all gets effectuated, I don't know. There's smarter people than I am.
Trump has to put a button on it. It has to come from his mouth. It's like, we're done with this. We're done.
Here's all the evidence, and I'm not going to. I've instructed DOJ not to indict anybody.
I think that would stop.
I think that would be a good political move for Trump. Now, I don't know the extent of it, so maybe there's something more serious that does require indictments. But
man, I don't know how it gets more serious than one president foiling his successor.
Oh no, it's.
I mean, look, that is.
It is a scandal.
Despicable.
I keep saying that we have lived through the greatest scandals in American history, and they keep piling up.
Yeah,
they keep piling
right.
up. I mean, it really, like we had a president for 4 years who was mentally incompetent.
Yeah.
And maybe three, I don't know, but I think four.
He's walking off into the woods.
And
the president of Italy, she goes out, holds his hand, turns him around. No, the press conference is this way.
We have one president.
Oh my God.
One president scheming to defang the incoming president or hinder the incoming president and what he can get done.
Right.
I mean, this is crazy. We had COVID where they lied to us about treatment, about the vaccines, about the money, about all of this crap.
Well, like, suppressed
we've lived
our
through
speech.
This crap in the last 10 to 15 years, we've lived through all this stuff.
Suppressed our speech, Steve.
And suppressed our speech. Locked us in our houses,
right.
figuratively.
Right.
I mean, it is crazy.
Yeah.
We've lived through this crap. And people are just okay with it. I just...
Because we've been, like you just said, we've been bombarded by it, though. Yeah. You can't stay on top of one after the other. After you just, you get numb to it.
You get numb to it.
And you don't really want to... You get, I don't know, not lazy, but just nonchalant about it. It's like, oh, here's another one.
Well, the middle class in our country has also been bought off. Yeah. You know, we sell ourselves very cheaply in this country. So for a few thousand bucks during COVID, where people could lay on the sofa and not go to work.
Well, this is great.
They gave up their civil rights for a couple grand. Yeah. Well, and you're like, and what is wrong with you?
And to work from home. I mean, it just is. I think back to your point, Brett. Mm. We've gone soft.
No question.
We have gone soft.
No question.
And that was just another pillow to lay on. I mean, it just is. I think it's like the Matrix. When you wake up to it, it all becomes like crystal clear and obvious. And I think doing the show and talking about this stuff has awakened me to it. I mean, it's like this is...
We're $37 trillion in debt because we paid people to lay around and not work.
Yeah, and still feeling it today. Yeah, exactly. I wanted to ask you one more thing before we leave Alaska how you feel about this. Of course, we're going to see, and this is a topic we're probably going to continue to talk about because it's going to be an executive order, according to President Trump, about eliminating mail-in ballots. I think the optics of this looks really bad that he says he has a conversation with President Putin that you should have won. Mail-in ballots don't work around the world. And all of a sudden he comes out with an executive order. Number one, other countries do have mail-in ballots. I'm not saying it works or not, but that's a total lie. There are five or six other countries that do. The optics look so bad on this.
They don't look bad to me. But
Putin talks to him about this order?
That executive order, by the way, was way the hell before this. Do you know what the date of it is? April of this year.
He's writing it right now.
That the executive order draft is dated in April.
Okay. But what I'm saying
and
is...
And secondly... Hold on. I'm not done. Secondly... It's not constitutional. The Constitution reserves to the states the right to run elections. So Trump can issue this order. To me, it's just model legislation for states to pick up because he has no power to tell the states how to run their elections.
Right.
So you're getting exercised over nothing, my opinion.
I agree.
The optics bother you, that's okay. Legit.
But
they don't bother me.
Yeah. Let me jump in here.
And it's good to put the details to it.
Let me jump in here. I think, first of all, studies will show that the most fraud occurs in the realm of this remote mail-in ballots.
No question.
That's where voter harvesting happens. That's where the most unreliability happens there.
So and a KGB agent who's now president of Russia would know that.
Yeah, so people know that. Right. Secondly, I agree with you, Norm. I don't think Trump has the authority via executive order or otherwise to eliminate mail-in balloting across the country.
Exactly.
Thirdly, I agree with you, Brett, that spouting this, and Trump just does this sometimes, up with this after a meeting with Putin about Ukraine is a bad look. It's like it's not the platform to say, I talked to old Vladimir, and he says mail-in ballots are bad, so I'm gonna make sure my executive order is in place. It's not good politics, and it just gives the media fodder. Now, Trump doesn't care. I think he almost does it on purpose.
I'm gonna use this example, not example, but analogy. It's like, okay, so if I'm gonna Obama or Biden, any AD sat in front of Putin and said that same thing within 48 hours, would we look at it differently?
Well, I think the mainstream press would. The mainstream press would back those two.
But we three.
Would I look at it differently? No, I would say. Look, why is this coming up after on the heels of a meeting with Putin?
Okay, and I think that's a decent test.
And it's not a good...
I'd say the same thing, too. And it's like, the hell?
It's just not the platform to start talking about mail-in balloting.
That's my opinion, though.
It's but I think all the other things I said are true. I think we would all agree that the most fraud happens with mail-in balloting. Yeah. Trump has no authority to eliminate mail-in balloting. And it's not the time and place and manner to start talking about mail-in balloting because... Putin says you should. I mean, it's just like, come on. Now, look, I think sometimes Trump just does this for effect. It's sort of like dropping a hand grenade into a party or something or a smoke bomb into a party. He's just like,
By the way,
why not? I'm going to talk about mail-in balloting.
I know. Exactly.
Putin says we shouldn't do it, so it just, that's how I feel about
and
it.
And I bring it up because it just bothered me. It's like, God, for me, the optics
look
bad. Does
it. Well,
it's,
not everybody
it's
does.
Like getting advice from a bank robber on how to avoid a bank robbery, right? You know, so would we go to John Dillinger? Would the FBI go to John Dillinger and ask for his advice on how to prevent bank robberies?
Well, we did it with the catch me if you can guy.
Exactly. Trump goes to Putin and says, what do you think about mail-in ballots? And Putin scratches his chin, having spoiled elections all over the world. The KGB is expert at that, at ruining elections. And he says, you know, if you want to screw the public, you know, let them mail in ballots because it's super easy to cheat.
Well, you just don't have to count them, or you can change them, or you can do whatever you want. There's no accountability.
I think that's how Trump computed that conversation. It's like, here's a guy who knows how to throw an election.
He's right.
But was it the right occasion?
Of course not.
Of course not. But is it classic Trump? Of course it is. And will he ever let it go that he lost the 2016 election?
No.
He absolutely election.
No.
He will absolutely never let that go.
That's like Pete Rose admitting that he gambled.
Trump says he won the presidency three times. Mm-hmm. And the second time he got screwed.
Yeah.
So that's how he views it.
But he's also trolling people saying, I'm going to run again.
Exactly.
Right.
And it's like...
And at the same time, he says JD is the leading candidate.
So. Or Rubio or whoever, yeah. Right. So I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either.
Yeah. Well, look, we got to talk about... And justice for all here. We've got this case in Ohio.
Yeah.
And
the Takiyah Young case, just to put a name to
it. Yeah, Takiyah Young. This hit the news about a year ago?
She was shot in August of 2023 by a Blendon Township police officer whose name, it's now out there, is Connor Grubb, or Grubb, G-R-U-B-B. Mm-hmm. And Takiyah was 21 years old, pregnant at the time. I think it's not disputed that she was shoplifting liquor as part of a rush gang, or whatever they call pop-up, you know, thing on the that people do on their phones. So a bunch of people went to the Kroger in Blendon Township, and they went in, they got a bunch of booze off the shelves, ran out into the parking lot. She was one of those people. She jumped in her car. And the body cam footage is now out there. The Kroger parking lot footage is out there. She struck Officer Grubb with her car after being ordered to park the car, to stop the car. She would not roll her window down all the way. They could not get the keys out. They could not prevent her from operating the car. And she defied them, and there's obviously a conversation between her and the cops, and she refused their orders and rammed him with the car. And if you see the footage, which I have, guys, I could see where her family would say, well, it's a glancing blow, he didn't have to kill her. And I could see it from his point of view. She just struck me with the car, and now she's going to take off and speed through the parking lot. She may kill somebody else. So he shot her.
Well, lots to unpack here. We should defer.
So our family's suing, wrongful death. He has been charged.
He's indicted.
Yeah. He has been charged with four counts of murder and a bunch of other stuff.
And I can get, I think there's two guests we should get in to follow up with this. One, his attorney, who I know. And secondly, our boy from, or our connection from LAPD. Mm-hmm. Probably have some good commentary on this.
Or maybe the head of the FOP, which we've had in here.
Yeah. But look, let's unpack this. There's a lot to talk about. This is on the heels of this idea that we're not going to stop crime. And there was this, and it's going on. Ohio didn't have this as much, but California, for instance, has lots of this.
Sure.
San Francisco,
the $1,000 limit.
Yeah,
you could steal anything.
We're just going to let people go into stores and steal stuff. Yeah. And we're going to also tell people that because of the color of your skin, then you're getting targeted unfairly by police officers. So there's a police inherent racist bias against you. So therefore, people conclude they don't have to follow police orders.
Yeah, right.
And look, somewhere, like all these horrible things that emerge out of all this, the truth is there's like a little kernel of some legitimacy to all of it. But it, because it blows up, it just turns into this notion where we have lawlessness. We have people not listening to police. And it's not just black or white. It's both.
No.
Like, I don't have to follow police orders because they're all bad. We've been told that now for 3 years at that point.
Right.
2.5 years, maybe.
Yeah.
So we don't have to follow the police. Secondly, we go in here all the time and steal stuff, and nobody ever does anything.
Yeah.
So we're just going to keep doing it. So now it just becomes, it's like letting your kid have cookies for breakfast. It just becomes what they want, right? And, and I'm not comparing these people to kids, but you get the...
Yeah.
But we've tolerated this, and I think it was Ditka says, you endure what you... Or you tolerate what you endure. And now we've tolerated this. So now we have this... With that backdrop, we have these people going in and committing crimes, clear crimes, smash and grab crimes, rush thefts.
Right.
And it was a crime, stealing stuff. You're not allowed to steal stuff.
No.
Now, we could ask, should you be allowed to use deadly force to stop people from stealing stuff? You know, in your house, you would, for sure. At a Kroger, can police use deadly? I don't know. And this is what you're getting at.
Yeah, no, so, I don't think he, you know, I can't imagine in, of course, I'm not in his head, right? But if he perceived that he was, either he or other people were, you know, in danger of losing their lives, and that's why he
then
had
yes.
to use,
right.
Then he's authorized, so, but not to stop her from stealing a jug of black Jack Daniels.
So let's take the car thing out of it for a second.
Yeah.
So the police show up at the scene, these people are leaving the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And, I can just picture Clint Eastwood, dirty hair, saying, halt.
Yeah, they were in the parking lot, just to remind you. They were already in the parking lot, the police, to help somebody who lost their keys.
Right.
They were trying to open
That's
up
right.
their car.
So they happened to be there.
They happened to be there.
And they say, halt. And these people don't halt.
Yeah.
They take off. Now, as you said, Norm, to protect others, the police have to engage in police work. So look, if you say halt and these people are taking off, now they're engaged in a high-speed chase. And what do you do there?
Yeah.
You know, how do you handle that? That's got its own set of risks and problems and people getting hurt. It's like if you think a high-speed chase is like it is in the movie, like people get killed.
Yeah.
Civilians, innocent people.
You can get killed at 10 miles an hour from a car.
So which is,
it does not have to go 75 miles an hour to kill you.
No, I'm not going to halt. Stand in front of your car, halt. Now, look, in my world, when I grew up, I would have stopped. I mean, I don't have it. It's not in my being not to stop.
Right.
Now, I get it. I've never, remember the movie Heat with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro and Val Kilmer. De Niro and Kilmer were the bad guys. And I think Michael Madsen was in that movie.
Maybe.
But anyway, it's like, now they're hardcore crooks at a bank robbery engage in a shootout. That's a little bit different.
Yeah.
But it's, but they're not going to stop when you say halt. So the police can use deadly force to stop them. It's a bank robbery, an armed robbery.
Right.
This is an unarmed theft. But now you've got a cop who's saying stop and there's a car coming at him. And what do you do? So look, if I... let's put ourselves in their shoes. I'm sorting this out as I talk. Let's put yourself, guys, in that situation. And I've defended people on both sides, believe it or not, where, you know, somebody's getting their loved one or in a domestic dispute or something is coming at them with a car.
Yeah.
You know, the person coming at them with a car is usually charged with something called felonious assault, attempted felonious assault. If the person's actually hit, sometimes it's an attempted murder, or if there's serious physical harm, it's a felonious
assault. Deadly weapon.
A car is a deadly weapon.
Well,
and
think about it. The car coming at you, put yourself in that place. It's either going to kill you or maim you for life.
Yes. Now,
it's got to be rolling in this cop's head.
Let's inject. So the first element of, say, a self-defense
would be. And
he has
split seconds.
Exactly.
To make these decisions.
Well, we'll get to that part. But the first element of a self-defense claim is going to be, does this police officer, do I in that scenario have a reasonable and legitimate fear that I am in danger of serious bodily harm? Well, a car is about to roll over.
Or others. Because he's sworn to protect the public.
There's others. And then the question is, does he have a duty to retreat at that point? Does he have a duty to get out of the way before using deadly force? And that's where it gets really dicey. Ohio has stand your ground now. He doesn't have a duty to retreat.
Yeah. And he has an affirmative duty to protect the
public, right? So now he's thinking, look, she's going to drive away. He's probably not thinking it, but let's sort of inject into
muscle memory.
As you said, because this all happens like that.
Yeah.
And so for those who want to know, the law does not measure nicely the degree of force necessary to repel an attack, because in the heat of the moment, It's tough to tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
But think of what happens if he doesn't act in some way and the car is going to swerve off and take off at a high rate of speed, and that puts others in jeopardy. This is just an impossible scenario hatched from this initial notion that people don't have to follow police orders anymore, that it's okay to steal.
Yeah.
And maybe you go back to, I talked about this on another podcast, the old broken window theory of policing. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to stop it, otherwise it escalates.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It's tragic
for both.
It's tragic.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. So I've seen a picture of this young lady. She was a beautiful young woman, pregnant, you know, the baby's lost. So two lives were lost. The thing that just destroys me about this story is had she obeyed the officer, she wouldn't have spent the night in jail.
It would have been a misdemeanor.
Oh, my God.
Well, maybe a felony because
she stole some Stolonaya vodka or some kind of bottle of booze or something.
So, but they're going to, you can turn that around and say he shot her for a misdemeanor. Well, it got more complicated.
Yes,
so for those who don't know, shoplifting theft is typically a misdemeanor. It's a misdemeanor of the first degree.
And he
in
didn't
Ohio.
Shoot her for that.
And if you employ force.
Yeah.
During or after the shoplift, it becomes a felony. It can become a robbery. So robbery in Ohio, and most states have some different terminology, but all the same.
Yeah.
A basic theft offense of that kind of value is a misdemeanor. But if you employ force to get away with it or to complete the theft, now it's a robbery. Now it's a felony.
Yeah.
So, you know, she was employing force to get away with the theft.
Yeah.
And I've defended plenty of shoplifting cases where people force their way out past the guards and they become felony robberies.
Yeah.
In both colors, folks. I've defended both, right? All races, all colors, all genders, all whatever.
There's kind of a funny story that's going around right now, and you may have seen this in the news. This Kentucky good old boy with tats all over him won $167 million, right, in the Kentucky lottery. Mm. They arrested him in Florida because he's in a bar fight, right? And his big crime wasn't the bar fight, right? I think it was Clearwater, Florida, wherever he's having a bar fight, and he got arrested. Now he's in trouble for assaulting the responding police, mm-hmm. And it's like, dude, you were gonna like maybe appear before a night justice, and they were gonna fine you $400. Yeah. You just won $167 million. Now
you can tolerate a little conviction.
He attacked a cop.
No,
so now the cop's probably going to, I hope the cop sues him and gets a few million for a private. I mean, that would be funny if he did, right?
Probably can't. That's probably a workers' comp claim.
But this guy's going to lose that $167 million like in 6 months. He'll be broke again.
Oh, God.
Look, the worst thing you can do is give somebody irresponsible a lot of money. I can't say this guy's irresponsible, but it sure sounds like it.
He's got a tattoo, a tattoo on him that says Mama's Bad Boy. He's one of those people. Okay. So at any rate, I'm just trying to reinforce your point that like you can escalate from a nondescript run-of-the-mill misdemeanor really fast when you attack a cop.
That's the
wrong damn thing to do.
Yeah. Now here's let's chop this up even more. There's a reason for that, because when you don't obey or you attack the police, you are creating a scenario that is fertile for things like this shooting that we're talking about.
Exactly right, man.
This is like, 100%. I had a client. He was not an African-American client, not a black guy, but he had some mental health issues. He decided suicide by cop was going to be the way to go. You know, goes on, knocks off a convenience store. He's got a gun, knocks off another one. The police are following. He finally pulls over. And he's got the gun in his hand, and he's raising it up. And it's like, dude, you're going to, like, the cops were way up in arms. Like, the cops, like, they were, if you had just a little bit different personality, this guy's dead.
Dead.
And,
right.
You know, and it just.
And it's probably righteous.
It would have been a good shoot.
Yeah.
It would have been a good shoot.
Yeah.
But it.
And then when cops don't do that, you have Joring and the other police officer from Westerville, right? Mm-hmm. That go respond to a domestic. The guy opens the door and kills two cops. Boom, boom.
Now, I suppose the real question in my case is, if the guy were an African American man, would they have shot? That's going to be the other side argument. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe the cops are African American.
In that case, no. But I've had plenty that, yeah.
Like one of the cops in the George Floyd takedown. They weren't all white cops. So, so. Serving prison time, you know. So it's complicated. Some more crime news. There was a teacher, an ex-teacher, 40-year-old, Stephanie Erin Kellenberger is her name, and she pled guilty to 21 counts of 21 felonies. Four of those were felony third-degree sexual battery of a 13-year-old girl, and the other 17 were sexual assault third-degree felonies. And I guess she took a deal where on one case, she was going to serve hard time, no parole. She took a deal, I think, for 15 years, and she can get parole within, I think, 10. So that's the math, and she took that deal. But I used to cover the Ohio State Board of Education. I used to go to their meetings once a month, and they would take away teaching certificates, and they would go. After executive session, they would come out and tell the public what the crimes were alleged to have been or the misconduct and the name of the teacher and that they're taking their license away. And it was almost all men in these sexual cases. Yeah. I am seeing now.
There's been a few. Every now and then you see a woman, teacher.
It's increasing.
But like most of the time it's men.
But a lot of times what's going on now is a little different. It's older women on boys. And it happened. So our governor, Vivek Ramaswamy, went to St. X High School. So did I.
But he's not the governor yet.
And there was a count. Yeah, no. Governor to be. I mean, he's almost anointed 13 months ahead or 15 months ahead.
True.
He has no opposition in the Republican Party. But anyway, he and I went to the same high school where college counselor, female, just pled guilty and lost her job and is going to serve some sort of criminal penalty. And this is happening more and more. I don't know what's going on in our culture, but it seems like is it the idea that we are encouraging women to be more aggressive and they're acting out like men used to?
I feel like some of this ideology regarding women is it's almost like they mimic. I can't relate any of this, but it's almost like they mimic the worst characteristics of manhood.
Of men, like, right?
Because I don't find it a good quality characteristics of manhood to go philandering around, and
especially with minors.
And well, certainly not with minors.
I mean, for God's sake, right?
Yeah, certainly. That obviously that's not any part of anything. But
"Hot for Teacher" is a rock song. It should not be like "How You Live." It's just a goofy
song.
It's a great song.
Great song.
It's a goofy,
on a great album.
Yeah.
It's a goofy song.
At a time that was better.
So you can be hot for teacher. Teacher can even be hot for you. But when you act that out, right, that's a crime.
I don't think Tipper Gore liked that one either.
No.
Video was was pretty risque. Anyway,
I'll tell you my Van Halen story.
I don't feel tardy.
Another show. Another show. I'll tell you my Who concert Van Halen story.
All right. Well, we've got Gordon Gee is back at Ohio State. Norm, when you told me this this morning, I was just like, I didn't catch this independently. Why?
So the cover story by Gordon in his announcement is that the current president of Ohio State, Ted Carter, who came from the Naval Academy to take this job, he met Gordon Gee when Gordon Gee was having a break from being president of West Virginia University, which was his last job. And apparently when he's on the sabbatical, he and Ted meet, and Ted says, gee, it would be great to have you back at Ohio State as my advisor. So that's the cover story. I'm not buying it. Somebody on the board at Ohio State.
This falls in like the quote consulting advisor role.
Yes.
Meaning you get a lot of money to do very little.
So he has residence at three Ohio State colleges as an advisor. The College of Law, the College of Civics, and World Peace or some other damn college. At any rate, this guy to me, he's a three-time loser. He was president of Vanderbilt, University of Colorado, Brown University. Are you getting the woke thing yet? This guy, in my opinion, from 1990 to 1998, then he came back from, let's see, it was 2007 to 2013. So he was president of Ohio State twice. And during that period of time, if you're a Columbus high school student, you want to go to Ohio State, you had almost no chance to get in. He tried to turn, or he has basically turned Ohio State into an Ivy League. And that is not, in my opinion, that is not what the people of Columbus want for Ohio State.
It certainly wasn't the tradition.
It's not the tradition.
It's not what it's chartered
and
to
it
do.
Really, it makes me super angry that it's mega bucks to go there now. It's really hard to get in, right?
Well, and when we were coming through, if you couldn't get in anywhere else, you could always go to Ohio State.
If you could fog a mirror,
you might have to go to Newark campus to start.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. But you could go to Ohio State, and I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I'm saying it's a good thing.
Yeah,
right.
Because I think
it was a good thing
because it was a good education.
That's right.
It was
right,
and this is all about perception. It's the same education, right? But they just made it more prestigious and elite.
Especially when you put the in front of it.
As soon as he put the Ohio State University, and then he got in trouble because he was criticizing the SEC for having a soft schedule. And of course, they didn't at the time. But anyway, speaking of football.
Him and his stupid bow tie. So you want to talk about stress for Norm Murdoch? This guy just added a bunch. I can't take it that he's coming back for the third time.
Take the gi off. Take the gi off.
Yeah, so this game's coming up in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
or 10
we'll talk
days
about this. Ohio State versus Texas coming up here. It's going to be a hopefully a good game. I love it when it's a good game.
Exactly.
And Ryan finally announced it's the quarterback.
Yeah.
Like he said what everybody already knew.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're at it. You know, is it Manning versus Saiyan?
Yeah.
Just saying.
It'll be, and I don't know what the dollar amount is because I don't go to Ohio State games unless somebody gives me tickets, but I have heard the ticket prices are just unbelievable.
Well, this is
huge. I don't know what that means, Steve.
And this is some
of
the good.
I don't know, but
I've it's got to be thousands of dollars.
Yeah, for good seats, I'm sure. But that's
not
unusual.
And what's that seat? 100,000 people?
That's not unusual for big games. But you know, you've got this. This is sort of a reflection of the new system because before this is maybe one of the good things because in the old system you would never have had two elite teams facing off in the first game of the season.
Yeah.
Now, I guess you would want to do a home like that early in the season because you could still overcome that maybe.
Yeah.
But why risk a loss? Get a couple tune-up games before.
Like Grambling State.
Yeah. Why risk a loss?
Some Ohio domestic, domestic college.
Right.
You know,
the Akron Zips.
But, they're both laying it all on the line.
Yeah.
We've done this a couple times. Maybe not the first game. A couple times. We played USC 1 year. We played Texas 1 year with Vince Young.
Yeah.
And lost that game, lost both those games, but they were good for both schools.
Yeah.
Holy cow. You know, we'll see. Now there's some blowback because it's at noon, Fox, thank you, instead of at a night game, which would have, I think, been better for Ohio State, but.
Okay.
You know, louder, more obnoxious, more people drunker.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, if anybody has a couple tickets they want to give away.
Common sense. All right, good and bad. What do you guys got?
I'm bribable.
Are you?
Yes. Good and bad. So, I just think the Hillary nominating Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize is super funny. And the only reason I'm calling that a negative is because she's clearly trying to curry favor with Trump because Trump is, he sicked Pam Bondi in the DOJ on these Russian hoax crimes. And, Hillary's election committee was behind the funding of the Steele dossier, which was then turned into evidence by the government to spy on Trump. So it's pretty funny. My plus is, and I'm gonna buck up a local event that's on Saturday this weekend. It's called the Bell Fountain Hill Climb. I happen to have won that event last year with my Mustang. I was the top guy. Out of 100 cars that screamed up this hill, The local sheriffs closed down the roads and were allowed to race up this ski, you know, basically this little knob in Ohio, which I guess you would call a mountain, you know, for Ohioans, but it's just a hill. At any rate, it's a very curvaceous hill, and it's free. You can come out, spend the Saturday, and watch anything from antiques to late model sports cars run up this hill. This year, I'm not taking the Mustang. I'm going to race my vintage racing Anglia, which is a little tiny British Ford. So that's my plus. And then I just very quickly, guys, want to promote next week's show here. We're going to have a retired U.S. Marine Corps sergeant, Stephen Walter, also retired from the Columbus Police, come in and talk about the anniversary of our withdrawal from Afghanistan and the Abbey Gate catastrophe, where over 200 people were killed, and I believe it was 13 U.S. soldiers, including one from Ohio, were killed by an IED. So
cool. Next week. Okay. Good. Yeah. I want to give props to President Zelensky for throwing it back at Brian Glenn, the Republican.
Oh, that was such a good comment.
That was so
hats
good.
Off.
That was good. I saluted that one. It's like good way to go. That was really, really good. So good for him. Good for him.
Yeah, I changed my suit. But you're wearing the same suit.
One. I'm like, good for you. That was so good. And everybody laughed. I mean, it was good. Everybody kind of laughed it off with this. He got it back. He got his swagger back on that one, I thought, too. And the Cambridge Dictionary is adding some words. This is kind of my weird one. That there's another one, trad wife, a contraction of traditional wife.
Wow.
Referring to a married mother who cooks, cleans, and posts on social media. And delulu, a shortening of the word delusional that means believing things that are not or true or real, usually because you choose to.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, we really have to label a traditional wife trad wife?
That's terrible.
It's not like that, but there's this whole thing going on where there's this culture of trad wives who like dress up in the 50s, Leave It to Beaver costumes and run around like that. But look, a traditional wife.
Out of respect of the tradition of that or mocking it or what's going
on? No, I think out of respect of the tradition of it.
Well, I think trad wife is a mocking. Working women like to say, I work. If being a full-time mother and wife
is somehow bad,
is somehow not work.
And here's what I don't.
What are you talking about?
Here's what I don't understand. I think that is the greatest. I mean, it's like a wife who does that, a mother who does that, deserves more respect, more
or as much in any way, as much respect.
I would say more.
Well,
because
at least
that's
as
the
much.
Hardest thing you can do.
No question.
It's the most self-sacrificial thing you can do.
And you're giving up household income. People who do that
are
foregoing other income.
Right. And it's not to be frowned upon.
It's not to be.
Because it is a choice.
Saluted. Right.
Usually.
And this is the problem with the sort of the feminist movement. It's not like I have no problem with women saying, look, I want to go work.
Fine.
Great.
Yeah. Yes.
Awesome.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But don't then turn around and chastise those who don't.
No. That's right.
No.
You know,
no,
that's right. It was, I think, the tradition there, or the like what I believed in that movement was the choice to do either.
Right.
Yes. Correct.
But don't chastise one or the other.
That's right.
You know, don't chastise one or the other.
Yeah. And it's usually within women chastising each other.
Oh,
that's
yes.
the thing. Women
are brutal.
They're mean.
The way they snipe on other females' choices.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
It's like, well, look, guys, we always know. If we start going at each other, it could be a fist fight. Nobody wants that. If you're
nobody,
normal.
Steve, right. You and I could.
We recognize lines.
The three of us could have a total beatdown fight right now, and I bet in 2 months we'd be over it and we'd be friends.
Or in 2 days.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're done. Or we'd be apologizing to each other on text, going, "Hey, dude, I'm sorry."
Grudges, just like living with that anger in your heart, eats you up inside. Like,
it does. Yeah.
You can't hold on to it a does. Grudge and not. Your personality changes. So, it's not healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I don't think, and we're going off on a tangent a little bit, but I just don't think that woman-on-woman angst is delivered because of any male influence. I don't think we've done that to them, have we?
No.
I don't think so.
Remember Sarah Palin? They found, a chin hair on her when you blew up the Time photograph. And, women jumped all over her. Like, why didn't you pluck that hair? I'm like,
Who enlarges pictures that big exactly. and looks for
That's
an
awesome.
Effing?
Oh my God.
My
awesome.
God, leave it alone, ladies. Jeez. But the people on The View and all these shows, they are so nasty to other
they
women.
Are.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right, well, look, I don't have much good and bad. Good luck to all the returning students here at Ohio State and colleges around.
First hope, day, right?
I think it's today.
Is something like that.
Yeah, so yeah. good luck. Yeah. The hundreds of thousands of people are descending upon the city.
Right.
And good luck. Do it safely. Go Bucks.
And be careful. It's back to school time. So driving's different. The kids are out. Slow down.
Go Bucks.
Obey the laws.
Yeah.
Go
you
Bucks,
know?
Except when you play UC, then it's go Bearcats.
Yeah. Well, look, CommonSenseOhioShow.com brought to you by Harper Plus Accounting, our accountant, could be yours if you want to check us out. All the backlog is at CommonSenseOhioShow.com. You got a comment, got a question, you can submit it there. Leave us a, or just do it right in the comments of wherever you get your socials. We are coming at you right from the middle each and every week. Till now.